This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com. Leslie, what's going on with you?
You know, lots. And I was going to talk about one thing, but now I actually think I want to segue into something else, a story that perhaps most people in America haven't been thinking about. So I was listening to the radio, and they had a story about the Uyghur minority in China, and how over the past year or so, the Chinese government has actually increased the amount of surveillance and policing in Uyghur communities exponentially, such that, you know, Uyghur businessmen are saying, you know, if we leave the country, we get detained as soon as we come back in, and then we have to go to re-education camps. There are cameras everywhere, and the police presence is unbelievable, and it's expanding ever more. And it's partly in response to, you know, this idea that Uyghurs are potential terrorists. I mean, there have been a number of Uyghurs that have actually joined ISIS. What's fascinating to me is, you know, looking at this case, if China would allow one to come in and actually study it on the ground, would be this kind of real-time hemming in of a marginalized group that I kind of feel like we've seen in other places happen over time. But this is like, whoa, it's happening right now, and it's happening in this huge degree. And then being able to study the effects.
Yeah, I remember hearing on NPR about a year ago that China was doing all sorts of totally gratuitous harassment of the Uyghurs with things like making them keep restaurants open during Ramadan, or making restaurants serve pork, which, really? You know, is not essential to the civil functioning of the state, right? It's one thing to say that people can't rebel against the state, or, openly spread sedition or something like that. You might think that's a little bit over the top, but you can see the purpose, right? Whereas this is just pointlessly rubbing people's noses in it. It reminds me of, like, the kind of things you used to see in the ancient world with, like, the Seleucid Empire, sacrificing a pig in the Temple of Solomon just to piss the Jews off, and then they end up, you know, getting the Maccabean Revolt, that sort of thing.
I mean, there's always something going on. I mean, for me, I just think terrorism is such a load of BS. Not that I know it exists, but, like, insofar as how much of a threat that it poses, I wonder, is this overt oppression, or are people sort of whipped up into a fear about terrorism like they are here? I mean, honestly, you're in much more danger of, you know, ordering a hot dog off the street of New York than you are getting killed by a terrorist attack. Actually, I remember I was playing with the START data. It's data on terrorism fatalities from the University of Maryland a few years ago. And the worst year of terrorism, I think, in the Israeli-occupied territory was 2002. Israeli society is always, you know, very concerned with terrorism. And I found, like, the actual fatality rate as a result of terrorism was lower than you getting killed from food poisoning in the United States. So, like, that falafel that I ordered for lunch was much more of a mortal danger than terrorism would be in the thick of the Intifada in 2002. Leslie.
Yeah, so I think that's an interesting question, an interesting point, like which is which, the chicken or the egg. And I actually think the Uyghurs were already being oppressed, right? And then you have this possible threat of terrorism, and then you actually have a rationale for actually not just continuing the oppression, but ramping it up. So,
what's a positive feedback cycle, right? Where you have a certain amount of oppression, some of which you can understand in terms of, you know, more or less legitimate policing aims. You know, it doesn't mean there's not blowback, but, you know, it still creates resentment, and some of which is just pointless petty harassment, like this business with the restaurants. And then, you know, this in turn leads to resentment, which leads to, opposition to the central regime, which in turn leads to greater repression, that sort of thing, and you get this positive feedback cycle. But it just boggles my mind of, like, if all I cared about was maintaining the power of my regime, I would, you know, I might very well surveil people. I might very well, you know, have curfews or something like that. But why would I force people to eat a meat that they consider taboo? It's just pointless. And so what's in it for me? And it's like, yeah, I know, you know, Han people like pork. God bless them. I like pork too, but it's, you know, more of it for us. You know,
I mean, yeah, presumably there's some audience for this that like wants to see this, you know, religious minority treated like shit. And so it's like, yay, this is our will. I mean, I agree with you. I don't really understand why, you know, certainly leaders would care, even anybody, but presumably that's why this is happening, to bring everyone else together.
Yeah. So Corey's point kind of reminds us of like our own politics, right? Where we'll sometimes see, you know, a lot of what the culture wars are about is kind of like, we don't like those other people and we're going to find some way to stick it to them, even if there's, it's kind of gratuitous or pointless or doesn't really help us in any way. It's just fun to stick it to the other side.
It's like that coffee mug that said filled with liberal tears. Remember that one? I remember hearing of a psychology experiment some time ago where it was an experiment on mice, and the headline finding from the study was that when you take out your aggressions and scapegoat someone, it's actually mentally healthy. Like, it feels good and it restores people from a state of stress by scapegoating someone else.
Oh, Robert Sapolsky had a study on that with baboons. So Sapolsky has these great studies, and he has a couple of lectures that you can listen to online, where he would dart these baboons and measure their cortisol levels, which is basically the stress hormone. And he found that when a baboon loses a fight, its cortisol levels are way up. But if the baboon that loses a fight, you know, beats up a female or a juvenile or a lower rank male or something like that, its cortisol levels go down. So it's like, it's a stress reliever to beat up on somebody weaker than you.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.